Hi, this is Dawn. Welcome to the latest episode of From Dollar Square to Where, the Arsenal Twitter podcast, which incidentally contains adult content which is definitely not suitable for young children. Please like and subscribe and leave a 5-star review, it really helps. Also, please be sure to visit the YouTube channel and subscribe to that. We have a brand new show, You Can Be the Star, the most interactive Arsenal show, where the twist is the viewer who entertains us the most on the night can join us live on the panel to air their opinions. We have great guests weekly. We've had Kevin Campbell, who was absolutely brilliant. That's still available to watch. And we also have more excellent guests lined up, which is very, very exciting. Thanks for listening.
All right, Treacle.
People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Hello everyone, welcome to a new edition of From Dial Square to Where. I haven't recorded for a little while, so apologies for that. I've been a bit under the weather with a bit of man flu, and as we know, that's the most dangerous illness you can possibly get on the face of the planet. But here I am, being a proper man and battling through it, and bringing you a new edition. So what a week we've had within the Arsenal world. An awful lot to talk about. Couple of matches that have gone on since I last spoke to you all. But before we get stuck into all that, a couple of birthday shout outs, as promised on Twitter. Here we go, bit of background music for this. Vixter82, who's Victoria, whose birthday was on the 29th. Happy birthday, Victoria. Goonagang, whose birthday was on the 30th, who's at Football Fantas 3. Happy birthday, Goonagang. Yes, hope you had a lovely day, both of you. So, two matches, like I said, since the last recording. Crystal Palace, 2-2. Nothing much happened in that match, did it? Liverpool 5-5. You know, bit of a boring match there as well, really. I don't know where to start. Interesting thing about both of them, funnily enough, and I'm not blowing my own trumpet here, but, well, I suppose no one else is going to blow it for me, but no, seriously, I'm not. But I did episode 26, if you listen back to that. Actually going to be re-releasing an edited version of that to cut it down a bit. It was the Mr. Arsenal Sheffield United preview. And I was online there with Ryan, Glenn and Niall. And on that podcast, I discussed before the Sheffield United game that I thought it would be worth trying the 4-4-2. Formation, and interestingly enough, last two games we played, he played a 4-4-2 formation. However, Emery being Emery, played it wrong, basically. Didn't play it the way I suggested, which is a lot more of an attacking 4-4-2 formation. And to me, it seemed like a definitely worth trying, because it's a way of getting Aubameyang and Lacazette playing up front where they should be in the box, having two of the best finishers in European football. They need to be in the box, otherwise it's being wasted. And it was also a good way of getting Pepe and Saka on the wings. And I just thought it'd be worth trying, maybe in the Carabao Cup, maybe in the Europa League. And he did do a 4-4-2. Must be, you know, a From Dial Square to Wear listener, old Mr. Emery. If he is, then he knows my feelings about him. I'm sure we'll come on to that a lot more a bit later. But yeah, it was just a passive 4-4-2, really. I mean, saying that, Liverpool weren't bad, was it, really? However, I just wish we'd play with two proper wingers and had Saka on the pitch. And I'm really sort of gone for it against Crystal Palace, especially. But once again, with the Crystal Palace match, I'm not going to talk right this moment about the Xhaka situation. I'm going to come on to that later on the episode in a bit more detail, go through the press release that he released himself on his Instagram, not via the actual official Arsenal channels, but yeah, we'll come on to that a bit later and how I feel about all that situation. But the match itself started off extremely well, going 2-0 up within 10 minutes. But this is the problem, and this is this really sad state of affairs, really, that has got a lot of the Arsenal fans feeling this way. But I just never, for one moment, thought we were comfortable after that, going 2-0 up. And I put a tweet out during the match saying that I looked at my son, who was watching the match with me at the time, and I said to him, well, and I hate myself for saying this, but I just turned to him and said, you know that we're going to balls this up, don't you, and end up either, you know, letting in one goal and just clinging on for dear life rather than going for a third and a fourth, or we'll just throw it away. And unfortunately, that's the way it turned out. And yeah, massive shame, because of not having that killer instinct. And during that podcast I mentioned earlier, episode 26, the Mr. Arsenal Sheffield United preview, I said something on there that we are like all the baddies in all the Rocky films, which is a bit of a strange analogy, but what I meant by that is that we, in obviously we know how it all goes in all the Rocky films, the baddies are always beating up Rocky right the way to the end, but don't quite show the killer instinct, and Rocky always comes round last couple of seconds of the last round and knocks the baddie out and wins. And that's the way we are. We can take the lead in matches, but instead of going for the kill, we just be submissive and just roll over and let the opposition do what they want to us, unfortunately. And the same goes for the Liverpool game, the 5-5. I absolutely loved that match just because of the excitement and scoring 5 goals and the end-to-end nature of it. And I would not love that match if it was a Premier League game, but because it was a Carabao Cup game and Mesut Ozil was back in the team, which I'll come on to in a bit, he just showed exactly what we've been missing all season, not having him in the team. And I thought he was excellent in that match, and the way he linked the midfield to the attackers. You know, people were complaining prior to that about Ozil slowing down the game, but quite the opposite. The way he sort of linked the play and kept the ball, didn't lose the ball. You know, I don't think I remember him, you know, one of his passes going astray. I heard on the Arsenal Vision podcast that his passing percentage was 94.4% or something whilst he was on the pitch, and I must have missed that 5.6% where they went astray, because I can't remember one of his passes going astray. He was just that good. And I know it was only against a Liverpool B or C team, However, there was still Cater, Milner, Lallana, Oxlade-Chamberlain on the pitch. It wasn't a bad team. And you know, a lot of the youngsters looked highly promising, apart from that one with the stupid haircut. And when he went off, our game completely and utterly changed. And I think we only had a couple of shots. Obviously, one of them was that fantastic, amazing goal by Willock, which was really reminiscent of that Vieira goal against Newcastle to me. Absolutely loved that, and that was a goal of the match for me. I love the Oxes one, of course, as well, but I think the Willock one shades it 100%. But we were 4-2 up, and you know, we lost the 2-goal lead again twice in one match, and absolutely gutting in the last minute. We couldn't quite just hold on, but that was the way the match was going, and you know, it was a fantastic match. And I was tweeting a lot during the game, and getting a lot of stick from people saying, "What, you enjoyed that? You were losing against that Liverpool C team or Z team," or some people were saying. And yeah, I did, because it was like we took the handbrake off for that game, and it was just such a refreshing change. And like I said, because it was a Carabao Cup game, I'm really not fussed about any of the cups, as I've tweeted a few times this season, because top four is so critical for us. I would be quite happy to go out of the cup games, the cup competitions, and really concentrate on the top four, because Leicester haven't got European football this year, and we've seen what they're doing so far at the moment. I really can't see them, you know, slowing up this year. I think they're a better team than they were when they won the league, if I'm honest. So we've got a real task on our hands to finish in the top four, and whatever we can do to get there is going to benefit us. And I mean, the biggest thing we could do and to benefit us to get there is to change the manager, in my book, as soon as possible. I think if we lose against Wolves and Leicester, or even a draw against those teams, it's going to be severely damaging for our chances. If it's done after, if we do change a manager after those two games, it's still going to be very, very difficult. So that's my thoughts on that. With regards to the Ozil situation, I really do think that his inclusion so quickly after everything that's gone on, and the fact that Unai Emery said it was a club strategy to be leaving him out, and then all of a sudden he's back in from the cold and starts against Liverpool, and it looks very much like he's going to start tomorrow as well against Wolves. And I can't believe no one else really has sort of said this, but I just think purely it's a smokescreen to take all the conversation away from Xhaka and obviously Emery himself at the moment, because Ozil's been such a story all season. I think it's definitely just a way of detracting from everything else that's going on within the club at the moment. And as soon as I saw that he was going to be playing against Liverpool, that's the first thing I thought of. I thought it was relatively obvious as from my point of view, but I can't say that I've seen anyone else suggest the same thing. And I don't know, let me know what you think. You contact me on Twitter at FromDialSquare, or email at FromDialSquareToWare@gmail.com. Let me know what you think, because I just think it was definitely a smokescreen, but in the end of the day, I don't care, because whether he is not the same player as he was before or not, he's still better than anyone else we've got to play that role. And in fact, I think personally that he's the only real number 10 we've got in the squad, because Willock, Ceballos, Guendouzi, Torreira, even though Emery thinks he is, none of them are number 10s. Torreira's a number 6. The other three are number 8s, for sure. And the only other person, really, who would be able to play that role is Smith Rowe. But I've said before that I wouldn't mind trying Pepe there. But yeah, it's Ozil was the only, which was the best option we've got to play there. And I put a tweet out on the 29th of October, and it was a thread that I wrote about Mesut Ozil. I'll read it out to you briefly. Emery knows what we all know as football fans, or at least should, that a player at any level of football needs a run of several games to get match fit, sharp, and to the pace of the game. This is the same for all young players, new signings, the older players, in fact all players. He knows that 60 minutes here and there will not provide a player with the chance to impress and perform to their best. He's picked Ozil for tomorrow's game, which was the Liverpool one, after all the contradictory messages from one day to the next. This is purely to detract the attention away from the Xhaka issue and nothing else. And Emery knows that no matter how Ozil performs, he'll get 60-odd minutes, Emery will sub him off, and we won't see him again for a few games. Ozil has been a peripheral figure since Emery joined us. Fans complain that Ozil is shit, but he's not had the run of consecutive games needed to get his match fitness, form and sharpness back. We've potentially lost Ozil's prime years because we'll never know if he could have provided Aubameyang and Lacazette with even more goals. Everyone who follows me knows full well that I'm not an Ozil fanboy. I just like to keep an open mind. And if you watch any video montage of all the greatest ever Arsenal goals in the Emirates era, Ozil is pretty much always at the centre of them all. I don't think that's a coincidence at all. We have been playing utter toilet football, and I for one feel that if Mesut could get his form to a good level, he's still our best attacking midfielder by a mile, and certainly can improve our turgid performances going forward. I for one hope he has an excellent game tomorrow morning and really fucks up Emery's plans. Good luck, Mesut Ozil. So he's now got one of the best front threes in Europe to play behind, and he's got Guendouzi, Ceballos and Tierney as well to feed off, plus Luiz with his gorgeous passes. I'm not saying that he's going to be amazing again, but he's got to be worth a shot and some faith. And so it turned out. And so it turned out as well that he did get subbed off after 60 minutes, well, 65. But it does look like he's going to start again on Saturday. And I do think, again, that it's really just to put the focus on him and away from the manager and Xhaka. And like I said, I'll come on to the Xhaka situation a bit later in the crack of dawn section of the show. So I'm just going to take a short break, and I look forward to coming back shortly. And like I said before as well, let me know what you think about the situation of Mesut Ozil being back in the team. Speak to you soon.
Mind of the gap.
Hey, and welcome back. Another, well, funny thing that happened this week was that I was just scanning through something that I think Arseblog posted on Twitter, and I saw this thing from Jamie Carragher saying that he's joining the podcast world. The first one is out tomorrow, and have a listen. And I replied, I couldn't help myself, saying, listening to Jamie's voice on a podcast, I'd rather volunteer for tooth extraction with no anaesthetic and then eat a load of salt. And to his credit, Jamie Carragher actually replied to me and said, I agree, that's why I've interviewed people instead. I'm sure Arseblog will enjoy tomorrow's episode. And so yeah, I mean, say he's obviously up for a bit of a laugh, Jamie Carragher, but the egg was certainly on my face, because that first episode was an interview with Thierry Henry. So definitely going to be listening to that. Give it a listen. Be very interesting to see what Thierry Henry's got to say, especially if he touches on what's going on at the Arsenal at the moment and what his thoughts are and everything. So yeah, I'll definitely be giving that a listen. And as I mentioned, I'm going to go through the Granit Xhaka details in a bit, my thoughts on that when I come up to the Crack of Dawn episode shortly. But Jack Stevenson, who is at Jack Truth AFC, put a tweet out there saying that I reacted badly to Xhaka's behaviour after his substitution, but I looked at it again and I'm going to say he showed he cares. He attacked Evra for his comments, so he backs his team, and maybe he reacted as he did because he cares. So rather than kill him, I'm going to back him. And I replied to it saying, I second this. He's been playing out of position all season, and unlike others, hasn't complained. He's been thrown under the bus by Emery repeatedly, and he's been the only player to stay strong enough to front up to the media after the Europa League final performance and the Watford game. So well said, Jack. I'll come on to that, as I said, my feelings in a lot more depth shortly. But of course, he shouldn't have reacted the way he did as the captain. Of course, he should no longer be captain. But he snapped in that moment. And being human, you can't blame him. Most people I've seen and heard have said they'd do the same in a similar position, probably. So yeah, I'm going to go through that in a lot more detail after the break. Hello, welcome to the latest edition of the Crack of Dawn. Hello. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Well, apart from my man flu, of course. Very brave and battling through it.
I'm sure you are. And no doubt I shall hear about it all through the weekend and all through next week.
If you're lucky.
Until you're better again.
It could take months.
Possibly, yeah.
Well, we've got some usual funny stuff to go through. And we've got, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, this stuff to talk about with Granit Xhaka. And I've had briefed you on the background of this. So
you have, yes.
Now, I've got to, I'm going to go and read through as quickly as I can. He released this statement after nearly, best part of a week after the event. The club told him to issue an apology.
To the fans.
Yeah, to all the fans. And he released it only yesterday, after pretty much a week. And by the way, listeners, you might be able to hear this roaring fire that we've got going. So it's lovely, lovely and warm. Anyway, And it's, well, I'll read through it quickly first, and then we'll have a quick chat about it. So Granit Xhaka has released a statement about what happened following his substitution on Sunday during the 2-2 draw with Crystal Palace. It's been four full days since, and the Arsenal captain has taken his time before making public his version of events. This is what he had to say. After taking some time to reflect on what happened on Sunday afternoon, I would like to give you an explanation rather than just a quick response. The scenes that took place around my substitution have moved me deeply. I love this club and always give 100% on and off the pitch. My feeling of not being understood by fans and repeated abusive comments at matches and in social media over the last few weeks and months have hurt me deeply. People have said things like, "We will break your legs, kill your wife, and wish your daughter gets cancer." That has stirred me up, and I reached boiling point when I felt the rejection in the stadium on Sunday. In this situation, I let myself be carried away and reacted in a way that disrespected the group of fans that support our club, our team, and myself with positive energy. This has not been my intention, and I'm sorry if that's what people thought. My wish is that we get back to a place of mutual respect, remembering why we fell in love with this game in the first place. Let's move forward positively together. Granit. Now, he released that, not through the club, but on his own Instagram.
Alright.
So the club didn't actually get a chance to look through it by all accounts before it was released. And someone called Swiss Gooner, I believe, put on Twitter afterwards that the actual translation from German to English made it sound slightly different, which I don't know. Obviously, neither of us can speak German, but apparently people have been going on saying, well, there's no apology in that whatsoever. And but apparently when it was in German, it did say he's sorry, rather than saying it's I'm sorry if that's what people thought. It came out a lot better in German, apparently, so it was more of an apology. However, so the background then.
Let's hope we don't need those again.
It won't.
Oh, okay.
I just put them on the fire. Basically, then, like I said to you, I think it was all a massive misunderstanding on Sunday anyway, because from like fans' accounts in the stadium, it was more like that the fans started cheering when his number went up because they were pleased that he was being taken off and a more attacking substitution was coming on, because that's not the usual way that things have been going. It's been more defensive. But he took it as if people were cheering that he was going off, and he took it upon himself to...
Wouldn't the fans have been clapping me for what he'd done up to that point as well also?
Well, I think he took it as like more of a sarcastic clap that he was going off.
Yeah.
And I think he's, again, by all accounts, he's very... I think he comes across fairly sort of an arrogant person.
And I think he's the be-all and end-all, the only player in the club type thing.
Or? Yeah, and he thought he made it all about him. And... there's a lot, obviously a lot to it with regards to all the, I mean, there's no excuse whatsoever for the horrible, vile social media comments. And, you know.
I don't think that the people who have said those sort of things about his family, which are absolutely disgusting, they're not fans of football or Arsenal, are they? Because you'd never say that, surely, about the captain of your club.
And not if you've got any sense, no.
Not to say things like that. And also, but the fact that he is the captain of the club, I think he could have obviously conducted himself a lot better and on the pitch as he was coming off. And
yeah. So it's just easy to see it both ways. It's easy to be angry with him. And it's also
Well, I suppose if you've had those comments at you and you're thinking about those, and then you can hear cheers and jeers and all sorts of booing and what have you, I suppose you're going to take it that way because you've already got it, your mind set on the nasty comments, haven't you? So
yeah, and I my initial thought straight away, which I tweeted out as well, when it, in that situation, my thoughts on it are, I reckon at that moment, because of everything that's built up over a period of time, he probably thought right then that fuck you lot, I've had enough, I'm gone. I bet he thought right at the moment he wanted to leave Arsenal and never come back. And he walked off the pitch, it's not known whether he threw his shirt to the floor or not, but he took his shirt off and walked down a tunnel, and apparently he just went got dressed, showered, dressed, and went straight off in his car back home before any of the players game were finished. Yeah, and apparently, I mean, all clubs, really, the way you're supposed to do things is go and join your teammates on the bench and watch the rest of the game and cheer your teammates on. But he didn't, he went straight home. And some of the other players went to his house in the evening to see how he was. But I think he just, at that point, and obviously he took time to come back and issue that thing, took 4 days, because he wanted time to think about it, whether he wanted to play for the club again, personally. And it is easy to see his side of the story and back him up, because I think anyone could snap in that situation.
Well, yeah, definitely. I suppose, though, he should really be thinking as well, though, that they're obviously not Arsenal fans. They could just be trolls of any...
Yeah.
This social media trolling.
I mean, it could be, you know, it could be fans of other clubs as well, to us.
Well, yeah.
Just stupid people. But, I mean, that was it. I mean, he had even worse things, you know, about his newborn baby and stuff. And it's horrendous, and it must hit you hard. But... thing is, you can disable comments. You don't have to have comments on any of your posts on social media.
Well, somebody wanted to say something to him, they'd say it one way or another, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, not if he's not doesn't allow comments on any of his posts. No. You don't have to have them. But the thing is, it's easy to say as well that, well, all these footballers shouldn't have social media accounts. They should just stay off social media or have a social media thing, but completely anonymous, so they don't know who he is. But I don't know. But in this day and age, people actually get paid for social media. You know, I mean, some people get paid. These celebrities get paid £1 million per tweet.
Who buy?
Companies for promotion.
Basic advertising then.
Yeah, because they've got so many followers.
Tweet about that you're drinking a Coca-Cola or something.
Shampoo or Coke or sportswear or anything, yeah. And they get paid to tweet.
Wow.
So you can't blame them. When people say that our player, Mesut Ozil, is our highest profile player and he gets paid $350,000 a week, but he's got more followers on his own than Arsenal have, and lots of other clubs have put together. Oh. And it brings in the club a lot of revenue because of brand awareness and everything. It gets the club a lot of supporters. So apparently Arsenal make more for having him as a player than they do paying him, obviously. So it makes it worthwhile with shirt sales and everything, and merchandise sales, because they own his image rights. So you can't really say that footballers shouldn't have social media accounts, because they make money and the clubs make money off it as well. But it's a very difficult one to say that either way, whether you think you should leave the club, not be captain anymore, or whether you just back him and say he's been hard done by as well. Because my other thing is that a lot of his problems are down to the manager, because he gets played in the wrong position, which leaves him exposed on the pitch because he's not a defender, and he keeps making mistakes.
Mm-hmm. What's his attack?
He's a midfielder.
Yeah.
but he gets played in defence, just in front of the defence, so defensive midfield. And the problem is, because the manager's so crap and sets the team up so crap, he gets exposed on the pitch by the other opposition, which leads to mistakes. And that's the reason why he gets hated by the fans, because he gives away penalties and free kicks in dangerous areas and everything, and he gets the blame for it, but it's not his fault really. So manager's got a lot to answer for as well, so it's an hard one really to fully justify either way. But I err on the side of feeling a bit sorry for him, but I don't think he should be captain anymore, because he should have controlled himself better.
Yes.
And not incited the fans. But I don't think it should be the end of him within the club.
How old is he?
27.
Oh. So he's getting on a bit for a footballer then, really?
Well, not really. He can play to early 30s, so he's still got a fairly good few years.
Wow.
But I don't think he's good enough for Arsenal anyway, personally. But it doesn't mean he should leave the club, just because of what he did, in my opinion. Do you feel sorry for him, or do you think he should just...
I think he should. If he's the captain of the club, I think he should act like the captain of the club.
Yeah.
He should lead by example and...
Have a thicker skin.
Well, maybe as well. The amount of money that he is on, and he is the captain, he should really be able to play in any position, shouldn't he? And maybe he should practice in the position that his manager's put him in. And, well.
Well, yeah. That's very true. Very true.
It's like going into a job, isn't it? And the manager of the place where you're working telling you to do a job but not being able to do it himself, really, yeah. Isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah, well, on a different podcast, there's people who are slagging off some of our new players who've only been with the club for a maximum of 10 games and have come from a different country like Spain or France. And I gave this example to one of the other people on the podcast, saying, right, just imagine for 1 second that you got a job in Spain to start next week. Right, so if you put yourself in this position, say you work in as a manager of an office, but your company had opened up an office in Spain and they said, right, we want you to go over there next week to go manage that office. So if you put yourself in that position and then you fly over there, you have to live in a hotel to start off with because you've got nowhere to live. And at the end of every week, from the first week, you have to do a big presentation to all the board of directors and say millions of people via live stream on the internet, and you can't speak the language. Like I said, getting used to a new country, climate, food, everything, and you're living in that hotel. So how do you think you would rise to that pressure to perform in that situation every week until between now and May?
Well, it would be very difficult, because, wouldn't it? It would be a lot of pressure you were under. But I suppose different circumstances, depends what your funds and everything were. Surely the manager of this club who's doing this, or the player, whichever one you're on about, I'm not sure.
The player.
Yeah, well, surely then they would not be able to get like an interpreter and speak through the interpreter. If they knew what they were on about, they could do the job, but they just couldn't speak the language.
Yeah, but it's a lot of pressure for a young person.
Oh yes, of course it is.
22 years old, come to a new country with new teammates you don't know, new manager, new club, and it's going to be really difficult for them, because they're humans and everyone's got different personalities. Everyone's an individual and they've got different strength of mind and different character. And some people will take to it easy, think, oh yeah, fuck it, you know, fine, you're really confident and so on. But some people are going to be taking a lot longer to get used to it. And they're under, people think, oh, just go on the field and kick a ball about. But how many millions of people all around the world, and 60,000 people in front of them, cheering or booing, depending on your performance, it's a hell of a lot of pressure.
Well, it is.
And you've got to be brilliant. You can't make mistakes. They're going to be worried sick about making mistakes because they've got to give a good impression. And it'd be the same for you if you had to do that, doing a presentation, standing in front, up in front of a board of directors who are all looking at you and people on the internet. So it's going to take an awful lot of self-confidence and pressure and ability to do all that sort of stuff. So people have got to understand that you ain't going to be able to adapt immediately. And you've got to give them time to settle. Because when it's, again, like when you're living in a hotel, you want your own comforts and everything, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You can't go in the kitchen and make yourself a cup of tea.
Well, I should imagine the sort of hotel they'd be stopping in, babe. There'd at least be a kettle where he could make himself a cuppa.
I'm sure there'd be tea and coffee really making facilities. You know what I mean? Go and sit in your kitchen or walking around. And you want your own home, don't you? It's going to be difficult living out of a suitcase.
It is. And, but also, as well,
when you're young,
for a 22-year-old, though, sure that would
no
be
no family, friends. What I'm saying is, people need to give people more of a chance and understand that people are human.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, that's enough of the serious stuff. What else have we got to talk about?
Let's have a look at some tweeticles, shall we?
Yeah. Shall we do this one first? It says, it's Nick at NickPearson1684. And his question was, who picks up a guide dog's poo? Serious question.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it?
Well, it is, but the guide dogs are, as I'm sure people are aware, very, very clever.
You know people that train guide dogs.
Yes,
don't
they do, yeah. They do guide dog puppy walking and getting the puppy, they keep them, they have them for 12 months, get them used to like home comforts and a family life type of way, and they teach them the basic commands.
They can handle the pressure.
Do they what, sorry?
Handle the pressure. They're not living in a hotel, are they? With tea and coffee making facilities.
Well, no, they're not, but they are living at a different home to what's going to be their final home before. No, they live with a family for 12 months, then they go off to camp, and then they do all their training and what have you, and then they go and they pair them up with people who they think are suitable to the dog. But anyway, back to the who picks up a guide dog's poo. They train them, like the basic training, and that is to get them to go to the toilet before they take them out for a walk. So obviously
they're really clever, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, Rusty, of course, he'd be excellent at a guide dog in that respect, because he doesn't have a crap anywhere apart from his own back garden, so... You wouldn't have any worries with whether you'd have to pick his crap up or not, because he always goes in the back garden. In fact,
when you go on holiday, you don't poo for about 4 or 5 days, do you?
Well, I don't know, but neither does Rusty. We went to Devon once, and it was only on about the fifth day that he thought, I'm not going home anytime soon, I'm going to have to go for a dump.
Mm.
Yeah. It was massive, by the way, just in case anybody wondered.
Like a baby's arm?
Yeah, something like that. Mm. Possibly bigger. Yeah, so that's... I also should imagine, because you said earlier as well, what happens if the guide dog gets like really poorly or anything? Well, I would think that people may forgive a blind person not actually realising that the dog's had a crap and seeing that the dog was really poorly. Either that was like dragging the blind person really, really fast. Get me back, I need to dump.
Crossing its legs.
Yeah.
Well, if it's sprayed diarrhoea everywhere, then the person slip on it, then there's blame, there's a claim, isn't there? Now,
that's
you
a whole different kettle of
roll
fish.
Around in the doggy diarrhoea. That would be very nice, would it?
Yeah. Well, I would imagine also as well, though, that the blind people who have guide dogs, they also have people checking on them at regular times, and they would,
Have you got rolled in diarrhoea?
One of the trainee guide dogs that my friends had once, it didn't actually make it.
I thought it was going to be a horrendous story.
It didn't make it as a guide dog because it was terrible at begging for food. And it would keep on jumping up, and even when it, after it had been to camp for all its training and everything, it's just still wanted everybody's food all the time, so I thought, well, that'd be no good, like stealing off a blind, stealing the food out of a blind person's hand, basically.
Why not? Stealing like, candy from a baby.
Yeah, basically.
Was it like these camps, or like a summer camp in America?
Yeah, something like that. They do like really intense training and that, though, don't they? But
in a tent?
Some of them, there was another dog that they had, another puppy that they had, and he was really laid back. He was called Marlon, actually. Was it Marlon? I think it was Marlon. And he was really laid back and everything. There was a young lady who got multiple sclerosis, and she got a guide dog. She was partially blind and got multiple sclerosis, and she was really laid back, young girl, and she wanted a... Yeah, they match them up really very well, the dogs to the
good.
Who they're doing. So yeah, and he was really good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Right, what else should we talk about then?
There's a tweet, I think it is, from On Me Edson at Daniel Floyd 1981. He says, I accidentally kicked my ball over my neighbour's fence and he put a knife through it and chucked it back over. I returned the favour when his cat came into my garden. Which,
we don't condone that at all.
No, absolutely not. But it's quite a funny tweet, yes. Yeah. we've got quite a few. Well, I say quite a few of these. Oh, lovely.
We've got a nice ball, actually, from kicked over.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, to be honest.
Well, yeah, but my boys have got it now, haven't
they? Yeah. Yes, there's a lovely...
It sounds terrible, nicking kids' balls.
It certainly does.
Well, no.
Yeah, we've got there's a couple of cats. Big black fluffy one. I think that's somewhere three roads away, but somebody up next door but one or so's adopted it. He just sits there and kind of looks at you. And then lovely Ginge, my little puss in boots next door. He sits on the wall and torments Rusty.
Well, the cats are—they just treat the place like a hotel, don't they? Really,
yeah.
They don't love their owners at all.
Well,
just use them for food.
I suppose I've never ever had a cat.
Well, they've got their own. They've all got roots around their local neighbourhood as well. Where they know they're going to get food.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I could never have a cat because I'd be worried about it. I'd constantly worry about being run over.
You don't care the fact that I'm allergic to them, do you? Really.
Well, that hasn't really crossed my thoughts.
Exactly. There you go. I rest my case.
Yeah.
Right, what's the next one?
Right, then we've got Adam at Alles Les Bleus 78.
Alles Les Bleus.
Alles Les Bleus, I beg your pardon, 78. I don't hate Everton. I don't hate Silva, the players, Brands, Moshiri or Kenwright. I hate my dad. I hate him for getting his leg over, not using a condom, making me an Evertonian and causing me 30 plus years of pain. Balding ginger prick.
I love that one.
Yes, well, let's hope he's being, what's the word?
Sarcastic.
Sad, that's one. Tongue in cheek.
I think so. I think that can go for an awful lot of
well. His dad's probably a very
football
lovely,
fans.
Very lovely man. The fact that he's actually got ginger hair is said to me that he's alright. So.
Well, my middle son, Toby, he pretty much said the same to me after the Arsenal game the other day.
Oh.
Not.
What, about, he called you a balding ginger prick?
Well, he called me ginger because I ain't ginger, but.
No, you haven't got
no he then. Didn't say anything, but he's basically saying, I've had enough of this club after every match lately. I've had enough of this club. I'm not supporting them no more. Crap. Basically, and that's awful weird to hear, but I can't blame him, to be perfectly honest. I keep telling him, he'll be alright, and he calms down after a day or two. A bit like Granny Jacker. Right, well, I think that's it for this week then.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, any plans or anything for the next week ahead?
Well, this...
Just so I can write it in, I can know what I'm doing and stuff.
This coming Wednesday, I haven't got a show, listeners. Didn't have one last Wednesday because obviously we had the match against Liverpool. This coming Wednesday we've got the Europa League match, which is unusual because they're always every Thursday, but this one's on a Wednesday. So the next live show will be on Wednesday the 9th with some great guests. So please subscribe and put the notification icon on. I'm tempted.
Wednesday the 9th.
I'm sure it's Wednesday night, isn't it?
Because it's the 5th on Tuesday. So that'll be the 6th on Wednesday. So that'll be the 13th then, won't it?
Oh, all right. Well, whatever. Yeah. Not this coming Wednesday, the Wednesday after.
All right. I beg your pardon.
And I was going to say, I'm tempted. I might do an impromptu live show tomorrow after the match. I don't know yet. But I'll let you know on Twitter. So there we are.
That's it.
But we'll do another podcast in the next few days. And look forward to speaking to you then.
Great.
Have a good day.
And you, bye-bye.
See you later. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thanks very much for listening. We really do appreciate each and every one of you. We really need your help to spread the word about From Dial Square to Wear. So if you haven't done so already, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe to the From Dial Square to Wear YouTube channel and hit the notification button so you never miss a live show. And finally, please tune in to the live shows. Don't forget, you can get the chance every week to be the star alongside Andrew and his great guests just for being the most entertaining viewer on the night. Thanks again and see you on the next episode. Bye!